Hi, family. My name's Luis, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Luis.
I thank a power greater than myself for another moment in recovery. Just need to take a deep breath out at the flow in. Before we start, I do want to take a moment just to thank the group for the privilege of sharing my experience with these steps. It's really been a privilege to interact with you folks in the last couple of weeks, and I've gotten a lot out of it, so thank you very much to the group. Let's see, Peter, green chairs get stacked against the wall and metal chairs get folded and put away. Okay, got that. Okay. All right, so tonight we're going to talk about steps 10, 11, and 12, the quote-unquote growth steps. In my experience, all steps are growth steps because if you started where I started, there was nowhere else to go but up. So to me, they're all growth steps. And as we've been talking consistently, virtually every night that I've shared, the idea that the steps are one. And I don't think it's going to be much of an exception. So steps 10, 11, and 12, we have just a quick preview. We have 10 is watching. 11 is essentially spiritual discipline. And step 12, working with others. Which there's a whole lot in that. So let's take those in order. So step 10, my experience with that step, I use the word watching for a reason. There's a key phrase in that whole instructions in our textbook that I've gravitated toward over the years. And it says that we need to continue to grow, right? That our purpose now is to grow in effectiveness. And it emphasizes that this is not an overnight matter. In fact, it states that this should continue for our lifetime. And it says, watch. Watch for Bale Pauly's test once again. But I'm sure there's selfishness, dishonesty, fear, resentment in that list. And it says when these things occur. And not if, but when. And just in the drive over here, I had multiple opportunities to practice step 10. And I know that, and I'm not trying to create controversy, I know some people consider step 10 the review at the end of the day, and I have a little take on it. I think it's active in the moment. See, I'm watching, hopefully I'm watching, and when I observe these behaviors in myself, then I need to take the action prescribed in that step. Which are fairly specific, right? And my experience is that when I'm spiritually fit, I'm able to watch. And if you ever want to have a good exercise, just try watching for a day. It's not easy. You get caught up, I don't know if those of you who have family, and you know, all the dynamics, you know, the normal life, day in and day out life dynamics, what happens to me is I get caught up, whether it be work, family life, etc. And I just get so involved in where I'm in that moment and what I'm doing in that moment, whatever role I've been assigned in that moment. And, you know, I can quite easily fail to watch. A lot of times I'm just sort of flowing with going with the stream of life, and it's not an issue. But as soon as one of those negative behaviors prop up, that's the key, to kind of catch it as it occurs. It takes a lot of, I find, it's been a lot of hard work. I understand a couple of things based on my experience with this step. I understand why they say we don't do this perfectly, because I have failed to practice step 10 perfectly. And so that's one thing that jumps out at me right away. And the other thing is that how much work is actually involved in trying to correct behavior as it occurs in the thought, in the moment. Because our program tells me that my main problem is in my mind, you see. And it's my thinking that, you know, not that all thinking is bad, no, but my negative thinking, I need to arrest that in that moment. Don't allow that thought an opportunity to take a life of its own. Those of you who practice meditation, you'll notice how these thoughts just sort of come flying out of nowhere. And when I'm attuned to that and I'm aware that, okay, these things has popped up that's not healthy, need to kind of like, what's the intent behind that thought? Where did that come from? You know, and I start almost an inquiry, what's really behind that, you know? And usually my experience is I find that it's restless irritability and discontent. That once again, I'm just seeking something external to fix some kind of internal condition that I'm going through. I mentioned the drive over here. When Phil offered me this commitment, I told him, well, you know how it is with my job, how crazy it gets. And a 12-hour day is a typical day, and 18 hours a day is not uncommon. And it's hard to get here by 7 o'clock. And, you know, I'm bolting out the door, and I'm racing down to get here. And usually it's motivated in some fear, you know, have. And all kinds of negative stuff starts coming up. And step 10 is a great practice to kind of be in the moment and to capture those negative thoughts as they occur and then take action on them right away. Because the action, if I don't take the action on the thought, what will happen in my, what I find what happens is I wind up acting out somehow on that thought. That thought somehow eventually leads to an action that causes harm to myself or somebody else, and then I'm in the amends and all that other stuff that needs to happen. So I find that watching key to practice in step 10. Last week I was kind of poking fun at our 9-step promises, and I said, geez, on the next page there's some terrific promises with step 10. And I truly believe that, because one of the great promises is that by this time sanity has returned. And it talks about proper use of the will. Assuming that we're spiritually fit. You know, there's that warning there. Hey, we're not cured of anything, and I get that. But at this point, sanity has returned. And if the thought occurs, and now I'm talking about the thought of the drink, I recoil from it, hot flame. And what a transformation from when I used to identify with that guy. And there's a solution who says it won't burn me this time. Because I used to experience that failure that keeps someone from putting their hand on a hot stove. That was me. It won't burn me this time. I've been burned 10,000 times in my entire lifetime doing the same behavior. But this time it's different. Let me show you how different it's going to be as I place my hand on the stove once again to get burned. And now, through the process of the steps, this connection with a supreme being, I find myself, if the thought occurs, and I have to just share, this is my personal experience only, that in the 15 plus years that I've been sober, I honestly do not even recall the last time I thought. I really can't tell you honestly when the last time that thought occurred. So I've been blessed in that respect. The thought has not occurred for many, many a moon. But if it did, I recoil. That's the miracle of recovery. I'm no longer fighting it. As it says in those promises, I'm on safe, neutral ground. Here's the beauty of it. It's a kind of a trick question. I always like to have fun with people about. It says, I think in the book it says something like, it comes naturally, without any thought or effort on our part. And, you know, I used to ask people, well, why is that? Why do you think that is? You know? And it comes back to our premise that we've been talking about throughout this whole process, is that everything is grounded in powerlessness. Of course this has happened with no thought or effort on my part. Had there been a thought or effort I could have produced to stop me from doing this, I would have done it a long time ago. I wouldn't have been powerless. I wouldn't have been broken. I would not have needed to seek power as my solution. See, and now through this process, now being really kind of almost culminated in step 10 in the sense that at this point sanity's return, my will can be aligned with the supreme beings in this proper use of the will. I know I know where this comes from, and I've talked about this in the past. You know, there's a term we hear buzzed around a lot now, anti-mind. And I understand my thinking got me into trouble. Our book tells us, our program tells me, that is the main problem with the alcoholic is in his mind rather than his body. I understand that. I get that. But I also understand that my creator gave me a mind. And I wouldn't be anti-mind any more than I'm anti-kidney or liver or heart. It's just another organ my creator provided me with that I need to survive and to live on this planet. So I'm not one to say that my mind is the enemy, because my program says that I can be restored to sanity and my will can be aligned with his will, presuming I'm spiritually fit, which of course is a big statement there. You see, so I embrace step 10 and the challenge that it provides me every day, almost every moment of the day, to watch. Watch when these things crop up. Not if, but when. You see. Because, you know, and I know, and usually when I introduce myself, I introduce myself as just as an alcoholic. Because, and I know that there are some people that introduce themselves as recovered alcoholics. I consider myself a recovered alcoholic. I just described earlier that I was recovered. I hadn't thought of this. I haven't even thought of a drink. But that being true, I've always believed in our illness is a threefold, right? Mind, body, and spirit. And through the grace of God, I've been blessed to have been restored when it comes to the mental and the physical. That spiritual malady, that third component, see, to me that's always been a function of my next breath. Those of you who play the stock market, if you've ever looked at a stock market graph, it kind of looks like this with a lot of jagged ups and downs, and I think that would be a pretty good indicator of my spiritual fitness. Okay? So, you know, to be fully recovered, I have to have all three things. So experience that wholeness, that oneness with my Creator. And so I just don't, to sort of stay out of that controversy, I don't introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic, only because I feel that that spiritual component is breath by breath. What is my spiritual fitness now? You see, a week ago, I came back from Colorado. I was just overwhelmed with God's grace. It was overwhelming. A week later, I'm back at work. The phone's just nonstop. The instant messaging, the chipping away, and the beeps and the bangs, and all of the distractions that the PC creates. And Colorado doesn't even exist anymore. And what I mean by that, and this is, again, still rooted in step 10, because it's a daily reprieve. My spiritual nourishment of last week is long gone dead. You see, I need to feed my spirit every day. Is a day when I need to feed my spirit. Because if I rely on Colorado last week, I'm a dead man. I said, I might have shared this the first night I did when we talked about step one, that I was one of those individuals that had this sudden, stirring, revolutionary experience, literally. And from that moment on, I not had a drink or a drug. And my journey began in that moment. And as you know, and it's hard to describe spiritual experiences. If you talk to people about spiritual experiences, you hear a lot of because there aren't real words to kind of put it in some kind of context. And I'm not going to try to describe the experience, but what I do want to say is that if I relied, as stirring and as powerful as that experience was, if I had hanged my hat on that experience and said, I'm good to go, I would have been dead a long time ago, because that experience really doesn't exist anymore. So step 10, living in the moment, watching. What's going on with me now in this breath? How do I address those negative thoughts? I can't wait till the end of the day to do my review. I might have acted on those thoughts by then. And that's my experience with step 10, one of the greatest promises in the book, right there on step 10. So step 11, right? I've always, I think I use the word discipline for that. And there's lots of views. Basically, they're telling us that the instruction is that we need to grow in understanding, and that this relationship, this key relationship that keeps me alive today, it needs to be constantly growing, right? And so the book basically suggests, quotation marks, prayer and meditation. And they make some very definite suggestions, right? They give us a whole outline of what to do in the evening. And my experience with that outline is this. It's changed over the years. And there was a time when I was very literal with it. Although my foundation is still based on the literature there, my end of the day varies, right? I look for that time of the day when the transition has occurred. I may not be going to bed this very moment, but I'm basically done. I'm done. Put a fork in me. You know, when
NBC. When she comes on at 10 o'clock, I'm basically done right around then, you know? So, yes, thank you. Yeah, when she gets on, I see her opening segment. I says, all right, after this is better. But anyway, so what's my point? When you look at that instruction there, there's a lot there, you see? And it's very challenging, and it's designed to be challenging, because how can I rest on my laurels when I look at that every night, and I review that every night, and I realize I haven't lived up to this? You see, I need to constructively review my day, and I need to kind of look at the day in the sense of so I can continue to grow, not to kind of whip myself and beat up on myself to kind of say, look how you failed, but it's more like, look how much opportunity there is for me to continue to grow. That's how I use the review. Now, if there's something so gross out there, you know, that I didn't catch when I was watching, or, you know, I'm at the end of the day and I realize, boy, there's some corrective action that needs to be taken. Okay, that's one thing. But for the most part, it's typically opportunities to grow. Because we talked about this earlier when we were talking about step 6 and 7. I accept my humanity today. And in a way, just as I've asked God to take all of me, good and bad, by looking at that review at the end of the day, what I'm also embracing, I'm embracing my humanity to recognize, look how short I've come, but understand that in God's grace, I've given the opportunity to continue to grow. See, I don't use that review to beat myself up per se. I use it to see, look how much more there is. It's really hard to rest on your laurels. If you look at that thing, have I been kind and loving toward all? I mean, that all thing gets you all the time. You know? Or have I been mostly thinking about myself? Well, geez, of course that's all I've been thinking about. You know? So, you know, there's a lot there. But I find it actually a very helpful tool, because it just reminds me how much more I need God. And that's how I use the evening review. It's my experience with it. Now, the instructions for upon awakening, I almost take very literally. I have I stay within routine, and I do have a routine when I practice prayer, meditation. I make time for it. One of the promises in that step, it's very subtle, but it's there like a Joe Frazier left hook. Says it works. It really does. Now they say we could be shy on this matter of prayer, but it works if you work at it. See, so I am not of the school that, you know, gets my prayer and meditation in while I'm brushing my teeth. I set aside time. I carve out time in the morning. I make sure that it's time that it's undisturbed, very early in my household. I'm not saying everybody needs to do what I do. I'm just sharing what I do. I have, quote-unquote, a sacred space. I carved out a place in my home that's private. Time in the morning, and it's really my favorite time of the whole day. That time, you know, I take time for meditation, prayer, both formal and informal. Try to take some time to read something that's inspirational. The whole War and Peace. Something I can gravitate toward, inspire me spiritually. I make time for it. I have found that over the years it has proven to be one of the great gifts of recovery, to spend that time just before the sun comes up. It's nothing like living in the day and being in the day. And if you look at the instructions very carefully, it says something like, let us consider the 24 hours ahead. It's again forcing me to live in the day, in the moment, see? Because me, my mind is racing. I'm already in mid-season with the Giants, you know, how they're going to jockey position for the playoffs. And, you know, the training camp doesn't open for another week. Follow what I'm saying? That's where my head wants to race to. Will we make it to another Super Bowl in February? Here we are on July 24th, you know, worrying about what's going to go on in February. I'm going to convince my wife to let me go that Super Bowl. Since I told her the last Super Bowl was the one time in a lifetime, this will have to be some other reason.
Right? So, you know, I'm being tongue-in-cheek to make a point, because me, I have this habit of projecting, trying to be somewhere where I'm not. And this, the prayer and meditation in the morning, it's very disciplined. It carves it out. It creates focus for me to live in the day and consider what's going on today. See? And when I face indecision, although I have many people that I consider that I would trust my life with in this network, that in my network, I don't make 100 phone calls faced with indecision to ask for 100 different opinions of what I should do. I relax, just like the book tells it. I take it easy and wait for an intuitive thought. See, and there's nothing like time in the morning to take that space and to get centered to start a new day. So what's the deal behind that? You might have a different practice, and that's fine. The book is very specific about this. It says, we're an undisciplined lot. And my experience before recovery was, I pretty much agree with that. Very undisciplined. And the reason I believe that our founding fathers or founding members put this instruction in our text is because I think we need to create a spiritual structure if we're going to grow spiritually, and it needs to be disciplined. So you know, again, I don't mean to take out a Billy plug, but you see, if I don't put anything into it, I'm not going to get anything out of it. If I'm going to do my prayer and meditation while I'm riding in the elevator up to the office, God doesn't need my prayers. He's the infinite. I'm not doing him any favors. I need this. Now, there was a time when I would get up pretty daggone early to make sure I was standing on a certain corner by a certain time of day to get what I was looking for. I don't see now why that I'm in recovery that suddenly I can't make time to get up. That's just me. And I think the challenge for all of us is to, you know, are we going to work this step to get to experience the benefit, the fruit of that labor? The book says a humble statement in our text. It says there are other helpful books also. And they even suggest we can seek out a person of the cloth, and I say that generically across all religions, guidance on that. And I think that's a great statement by the book, because I have found that I've taken that suggestion and run with it, and that people who've known me before, that I could classify myself as a seeker. I have searched high and low across all the great traditions of this planet, spiritual truth and wisdom. I didn't really join AA to become a seeker, quite frankly. But that's where AA has taken me, see. I guess I was always a seeker. I was always seeking the next one, right? But next to the power of God and the instructions in our program, there's been a shift in my personal life. So again, step 11, discipline. And see, I'm running long, so I'll try to be quick. So we get to step 12, working with others. A host of promises, right? Nothing will ensure immunity from drinking as extensive work with other alcoholics. Me, step 12, a great man used to tell me, if you're not at 12, you're stuck at 1. Meant by that, again, that this is all about powerlessness. If I'm not grounded in the fact that lack of power is my dilemma, and that I need to continue to have this experience with a supreme being to keep me sober, to keep air in my lungs. And one of the things that we're instructed to do in order to have that relationship grow is to get out of myself and help another sick, suffering human being. That's why I work step 12. Because extensive work with others is vital to permanent recovery. One of the prefaces, it says, right, to save myself, and I'm paraphrasing, I have to work with another alcoholic. Essentially, at the bare ground floor now, ground floor, that's why I practice step 12. That's why I make time to sit with others and take them through the work the way I was taken through the work. Not that the way I do the work is any kind of superior way. It's just what I have experience with. That's how I was taken through. That's how I take others through. Others have other techniques, which we'll probably hear about here, and that's all great. And I learn from here what other experiences are. But my experience is I sit with a person one-on-one, and we go through our basic text, starting at the title page. And I know that there are other ways to do this, and that's fine. Respect them all. This is just my experience. Because that's somebody took the time to take me through that process that way. So that's what I do. But at the ground level for why I do this, it's not because I'm a nice guy, and the people that know me know I'm not a nice guy. It's because in order to save myself, I have to do this. I'm not cured of anything. So I have to freely give what was given to me. And there's a certain approach that we're supposed to use, and there are a host of instructions, which we don't have time to go through since I ran long. But there's an important thing there. It says, explain the grave nature of alcoholism. We can't sugarcoat this to the people that we're trying to help. I can't pat you on the back and tell you it's going to be okay, because if you're a sick, suffering alcoholic the way I was a sick, suffering alcoholic, guess what? It's not okay. Now, I need you more than you need me, which reminds me, I have a suggestion for the group. I think rather than ask people to raise their hand that have had the spiritual experience and everybody raise their hand and then say, hey, if you're looking for a sponsor, those are the people, we should just have the people who haven't had a spiritual experience raise their hand. And now you, those of you who are desperate to work with someone else, now you know who you need to go run to. Because the way I was taken through the steps, the first person that took me through the steps, he took my phone number. And I don't want to get a little crazy about this, but I might. Because if you look at our basic text in the history, look at the stories and vision for you. You know, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, they went to the hospital to explain their need. See, they needed to find somebody to work to. They didn't put a shingle up and wait for people to ring the door. And I know it's a different era and so forth, but in today's, in our culture today, what do? Somebody says I'm a newcomer or whatever, and next thing you know, the meeting list is being circulated and people are writing their names and numbers, and I'm sure maybe somebody might actually phone somebody. But in all my experience with that, I've never seen anybody call any of those numbers. Are we really? Am I helping now? Or am I just trying to, you know, placate my feelings by saying, yeah, I really reached out to that guy. I gave him my phone number. No, I need your phone number. I need to call you. That's my experience. That's the sense of urgency that I bring with this. And I tell you why. Not because I'm a nice guy. Because I'm a hopeless alcoholic. I am powerless. I need to have that experience of working with others. And when I do it, like it says, explain the grave nature of our illness. Express the spiritual feature freely. Something along that lines. Oh, you want to really get me riled up? Just ask me to speak at a meeting and then whisper in my ear before I come up, oh, we only talk about steps 1, 2, and 3 here. That's not the instructions in our program. It says, you know, explain, talk about the action you took. It's practicing step 12. A billion promises as a result. Complete freedom. Right? What does it say? Don't be afraid to go to any sordid place on earth. It's motives, that God would keep us unharmed. Powerful stuff. And, you know, I've been sober some time now, a little bit of time. I don't keep score. I don't have a roster at home. But I've sat with over 200 people easily in my experience. Here's the kicker. They've helped me grow. I'm about to wrap this up right now. I'll give a little biblical story, not to be religious, right? But there's a story, right? John the Baptist, no man born of woman greater than him, but yet he's the least in the kingdom, paraphrasing. Well, my sponsor, who I love deeply, that you all know, nobody more important, my recovery, took me through. But in the same breath, he's the least important. People that gave me the privilege of taking them through the work, those are my true teachers. They're the people that helped me grow. So as much as I love my sponsor and the experiences we had together, he's least important. What's been most important are all of those people that I sat with and we cracked that book open and then we start with, okay, we're at the title page. Draw that triangle out. Go through what our symbol means and we start there. See, those have been my true teachers. That's what's helped me grow. In recovery. That's why the newcomers boast, because ultimately, once again, lack of power is my dilemma. It's one who has all power. May you find them now. God bless you.